This is Mental, the podcast to destigmatize mental health. I'm Bobby Temps.
I'm Danny Hogan.
Each Thursday, we delve into a factor or condition that influences the mind and how to better manage it. With special guests and stats you can trust, here we go. So we're back and returning to our regular style episodes after our COVID-19 coverage. The first one is going to be on self-esteem. This was an interview we actually recorded right at the beginning of lockdown. So I'm really looking forward to listening back to it and being reminded of the great insight from our guest, who we'll talk about shortly. But before that, we'll talk a little bit about the theme, self-esteem. First off, with some information from the NHS, and we'll read out a few snippets of that with their headers. So first off, what is self-esteem? Self-esteem is the opinion we have of ourselves. When we have healthy self-esteem, we tend to feel positive about ourselves and about life in general. When our self-esteem is low, we tend to see ourselves and our life in a more negative and critical light. We also feel less able to take on challenges that life throws at us.
What causes low self-esteem? Low self-esteem often begins in childhood. Our teachers, friends, siblings, parents, and even the media can send us positive and negative messages about ourselves. The message that you are not good enough is the one that stays with you. Perhaps you found it difficult to live up to other people's expectations of you or to your own expectations. Stress and difficult life events such as serious illness or a bereavement can have a negative effect on self-esteem. Personality can also play a part. Some people are more prone to negative thinking, while others set impossibly high standards for themselves.
How does low self-esteem affect us? If you have low self-esteem or confidence, you may hide yourself away from social situations, stop trying new things, and avoid what you find challenging. In the short term, avoiding challenging and difficult situations might make you feel safe. However, in the long term, this can backfire because it reinforces your underlying doubts and fears. It teaches you the unhelpful rule that the only way to cope is by avoiding things. Living with low self-esteem can also harm your mental health and lead to problems such as depression and anxiety. You may also develop unhealthy habits such as smoking and drinking too much as a way of coping with this. So I thought that was really interesting on just like a general summary of the relationship between self-esteem and mental health. What do you reckon?
Yes, I agree. And also it's worth pointing out that I think we all potentially feel low self-esteem at times, but it's important to recognise that it flows, it comes and it goes, it can be lifted at times and it can go back low. And I think when it's low, always important to know that that can change and some of the things that you can do to rebuild that in yourself.
Absolutely. And I think that's right, because whilst there is a lot of crossover between self-esteem and how that relates to mental health, they're not the same. You know, self-esteem is something that naturally ebbs and flows in the way emotions do. It doesn't necessarily mean there's a problem there, but I think there's things we can all do to work on our self-esteem. And that's a really great way of building our resilience and even help prevent mental illness as well. So one study I found published by the American Psychological Association found that low self-esteem can be a predicting factor in the later development of depression or anxiety. That may make you more vulnerable to struggling with your mental health later on in life.
Absolutely. The same the other way around. I guess if you're suffering and living with depression, for example, it's bound to have an impact on your self-esteem, you know, so yeah. There's a direct link.
Yeah, you're right. It very much goes both ways and can be a big factor in recovery when it comes to mental illness as well. If you don't feel you're worth recovering, or that, you know, with an example of something like depression, if you've got used to that emotional state and how it affects your life day to day, if your self-esteem is also low, which of course can be contributed to by the depression, then you may not think you're worth the help or you're worth getting better, that your life is like this and that's what you deserve.
Absolutely.
And that can be really scary. And so that's why we're glad that there is more recognition and to see the NHS championing these links and tackling people's health in a broader way than just, you know, what is the illness. There are factors even beyond the symptoms that can be a big part of that.
Absolutely. And I hope that our campaign for you know, mandatory mental health education will definitely support all of those things, because there's, you know, they're so intrinsically linked. And as you said, it just leads to long-term, it can lead to long-term illness. And, you know, I work for, I volunteer for SHOUT, the Crisis Counselling Service. And I had somebody on the other day who hasn't been diagnosed with anything, doesn't feel generally depressed, but has a real problem with neighbours, really real problem with her own self and her self-esteem, and constantly then thinks about taking her own life. You wouldn't put that aside and say, well, we can't support this person because she's not got a diagnosed mental illness. It does not mean that she's any less deserving for the help.
Yeah, I'm pleased to say, actually, in both the mental health education coming to England and Wales, there is specific mention of building self-esteem in each one. Yeah. And I've been part of trying to refine that language and what's included there. So it's definitely going to help. But like you're so passionate about, it's really important when we find these preemptive factors that they're acted on.
Yeah, absolutely.
And actually, I'm really glad you've brought up school-aged children as well, because a key stat I found for it was from a Childline review. So they have regular reviews into their service, and for the 2014 to 2015 year. And they looked at the most common categories of reasons why young people were contacting them. And the top concern was family relationships, including conflict in the family or parents' divorce or separation. And the second one below that was low self-esteem, feeling sad, low or lonely. And then interestingly, the third one was abuse, including sexual, online, physical, emotional or neglect. And I found that really interesting, because so often when you think of a service like Childline, we do think of children that are in physically vulnerable situations. We do think about abuse. We do think about neglect. And often more the physical trauma, you know, and that's a weird thing to think of when we're so passionate about mental health, that when we think about Childline, our default could still be kids that are being hurt physically.
And yet
that comes down. I mean, of course, there's huge crossovers. Just because you're being physically abused does not by any means mean there's not mental abuse. But it's interesting that that's the third one down, and that the category with self-esteem in it comes above that.
Absolutely. That's a really interesting point. And also, it's great to know that there are young people out there that have got the know-how, you know, have got the know-how, if you like, or the ability to express that, you know, potentially doing better than adults, that they can actually express feeling low, feeling sad, feeling like I've got low self-esteem, you know, that they want to talk about those feelings. That's great.
Yeah. And I think even in the way they collected these statistics really speaks to how much this is linked. The fact that low self-esteem was put in the same category as feeling sad, low or lonely. It's just so intermeshed that particularly when speaking to children, they may not be able to actually separate. You know, I feel low and I also dislike myself. And to them, it's just quite obviously intertwined in a way that sometimes us adults struggle to kind of wrap our head around how interconnected mental health can be.
Absolutely.
So yeah, maybe the children have it right. So
I think they do.
So that's the last stat from us. And then in terms of our guest today, I'm really delighted to have got to cover self-esteem with Danny Wright, who's a singer-songwriter and has been described by BBC Introducing as the prince of pop punk.
Whoa.
Which I love. And it was interesting to talk to him, not only his experience of self-esteem personally, but also professionally, that so often we automatically assume someone that will get up on stage and perform must have a certain level of confidence and self-belief. And actually the path to that has been pretty turbulent from him. So I always like to highlight it when we can find examples that are maybe a little bit unexpected. You know, it can be so easy to make these assumptions. Only a few weeks ago, we were talking about Ellie Goulding, the fellow singer, talking about social anxiety, which again, you don't think someone that will perform on a stage in front of that many people has an anxiety specifically related to large groups of people.
Absolutely. We don't think about that at all, actually. These people, unless they, you know, they come out with that they've had lots of problems, or they've, you know, used or misused drugs and alcohol because of some of the things that they've been through. And then people kind of start to recognize, oh, okay, maybe this person's needed some help or they've struggled. But we don't really actually give that much support, and we don't talk so much about, yeah, artists, comedians, performers who really do find it. I mean, Beyonce is a good example. She's always said, me as Beyonce, I'm the shyest person ever. I had to come up with Sasha Fierce. I had to come up with another name to perform under, because when I'm Sasha Fierce, I can be fierce and do what I need to do to get the job done. Don't ask Beyonce to get up on there because I'm petrified, yeah. You know?
Yeah, and I think she, you know, even beyond that album, she found a way to bring that spirit into performing under her own name as well, you know, or separately from Destiny's Child, for example, yeah. That there's kind of even now a Beyonce for the stage and a Beyonce for her family life.
Absolutely. It's interesting.
So it was fascinating talking to him. He's very sweet. As we mentioned, he talked to us in the first week of lockdown. So I may not be able to remember a huge amount of exactly what was said, but I remember it being a very good interview. He's very articulate and, yeah, just a great person to give us a little bit of normality for an interview in what was actually a very strange week and a lot of change for us. So as much as the COVID-19 series was fascinating and I feel very important, vital really to cover, it is also quite nice to be getting back to the comfort of, okay, this is our usual intro. Now we're going to go through some stats. Now we'll talk about the guest.
Yeah.
We don't have to have all the answers. And so I'm delighted to have Danny on board to give a lot of his insight on what he's learned. And another thing worth mentioning is the reason we chose this episode as the one to come back to after our COVID coverage. And that's because self-esteem has been affected for so many people during the lockdown, whether it's because usually your self-esteem is quite heavily linked to your work, and that's where a lot of your self-worth comes from, or maybe it's had a knock because you're feeling less productive, or your finances aren't where they want to be, or you're not maybe coping with your mental health as well as you normally would. You know, there are all of these life shocks we've got going on that can really affect not only how we feel, but also how we view ourselves. And while so many of us have been trapped in during the lockdown, it has been very easy to turn the negativity and the worry and the stress in on ourselves. And so this one seemed the natural one to come back in with. Have I made sense the way I've described it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a great transition from what we've been through into hopefully what will be a new and different chapter. But you're right, not having the things around us that we normally, rightly or wrongly actually, use to build ourselves up. People, work, doing a good job that day, being part of a sports team, winning a match, I don't know, being part of a book club and getting through the book and reviewing it, whatever it might be that kind of gives you your, you know, putting on a nice outfit, going to a restaurant, oh, you look nice, whatever it might be that kind of builds you up and gives you that feeling of, actually, yeah, I'm all right. That's gone. It's been gone for 3 months. So again, you just start to look at yourself in the mirror, or you're not being creative, or you're not, maybe you're still working, perhaps some people, and doing a good job, or you might be homeschooling, but the things that you generally use, maybe subconsciously or not, to pep you up have diminished probably for quite a lot of people. So I think low self-esteem was bound to kick in, actually, at parts and at different times for different people. So, yeah, great episode to transition into, I think.
Yeah, thank you. And you've done a really good job there of giving far broader examples than I gave. So thank you for helping explain my point.
Maybe that says something.
Maybe. And I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing. Does that mean your self-esteem has been impacted in more ways than mine? I don't know.
Let's leave it there.
Grand. So we'll get into the interview with Danny in a moment. But first, who's our sponsor? Let's find out.
So my name is Danny Bright. I'm a musician. My mental health journey started a few years ago when I ended up in A&E from having a really extreme, overwhelming panic attack. And this panic attack came on unexpectedly, really, I was working an event. I was having this funny, overwhelming feeling of, it's really hard to describe actually, but it's just quite a uncontrollable, unsettling feeling. It just didn't feel right for me. And I was working this really busy place. I was working at Wembley, actually. So it was really, really busy. And I pulled out this medic and I was like, excuse me, I don't know what's going on, but I don't feel right. And I was being very humble about the whole thing, very like apologetic, like, oh, sorry to disturb you. But inside, I wasn't feeling right at all. I was like really, really scared. And I was trying to cover it up with this kind of like polite facade. Anyway, he took me to the medic area where they had an ambulance. They put me in an ambulance and just sat me down to try and calm me down, but realised that I wasn't okay. And they did some heart tests with me because they could see I was like shaking, I was like sweating, and my heart was palpitating, just going crazy, is what they said. And they decided to take me to A&E straight away. They said, it's your heart, so we don't want to risk anything. So I felt like it was a bit of a wake-up call. It was my body telling me, you need to kind of check yourself, you need to look into things, you need to stop brushing things under the table, kind of like stop ignoring some of the signs. Because there was a lot of stuff going on in my life, a lot of stresses, a lot of things that just happen in life. I think like that moment was kind of my body was telling me, like, okay, now I've had enough now. So the doctor there, he said, like, have you got any stress going on in your life? And he recommended that I see my GP, which I did after the A&E. And my GP was the one that recommended therapy. Before this incident, I never have considered therapy before. I even still like thought about it for a while, and then I went ahead with it. Mm-hmm. The CBT therapy is how it all began for me, really.
Thank you for sharing that. So we'll definitely get back into talking about how therapy impacted it.
Yeah.
But I just wanted to ask about, you said there were things that you were ignoring and this felt like a kind of wake-up call that you had to look after yourself and take this seriously. So what sort of symptoms had you experienced before?
So the way I was feeling at that event when I had that extreme panic attack, I felt like I was having mild versions of that before in my life. And it was just like constant sort of anxiety through things that were going on in my life. I wasn't really confronting a lot of things. I wasn't dealing with things. There were signs of anxiety, which I was, if I'm completely honest, like I was numbing it through doing other things. So I was masking it by, sometimes it would be drinking, and sometimes it would just be going out with friends and ignoring the stresses in my life, the issues. And these were the things that were causing this anxiety, you know, affecting my mental health. I was ignoring it. And because it was definitely linked to this, the only word I can say is ego. It was kind of like a pride thing. It was kind of like, I'm strong enough to deal with anything. Like, this isn't a big issue. I can deal with it. I can handle it. Rather than realizing it was affecting my mental health more and more and not dealing with it.
Right. And I think that can be really common, particularly for men, as a kind of deceptive mask. Yeah. That our default can be to go to this kind of man-up approach to sort of distract from the fact that we're actually really not coping. So in terms of today's episode being about self-esteem, do you mind sharing a little bit about where your self-esteem was at, despite the fact you were really presenting like everything was fine?
I was definitely having dips of very low self-esteem during that time. What you just said about is that man-up mentality. My upbringing was to be tough and strong in all situations just because of things I went through growing up. So when I was going through things that did lower my self-esteem, I was kind of still ignoring that, the fact that internally I was struggling with self-esteem, but externally I was showing that I wasn't struggling with it. I guess I was focusing more on that, like letting that be more important, that no one else sees that internally I'm like struggling. So to answer your question, I was having huge dips of low self-esteem, which was making the anxiety worse. Yeah.
And can you share a little bit about what you were focusing on within that? Was there particular criticisms you had of yourself?
for me personally, it's kind of like life choices that I've made and other people kind of perpetuating insecurities that I might have had in a way, or might have been like slight insecurities. So as crazy as it is, but the fact that I do music, I'm an artist, it's a very difficult career to pursue. But I've had people in my life, I don't want to sound like woe is me here, but I've had people in my life kind of put me down with my dreams, using my dreams against me, or using my drive and passion, and basically affecting my self-esteem with that. So, for example, some people would say who I wasn't in a great place with would use my music against me, saying, you're shit, you're rubbish, you're never going to get anywhere. Like, what's the point? Like, no one likes you. Just give up. And then because you're hearing that, it was those things that were affecting my self-esteem. And when you're going through periods of like extreme stress, those external voices were becoming internal. So when I say the life choices, I was like questioning, oh, shit, have I done the right thing? Should I be doing this? Are people right saying that? There's no point.
Yeah, for sure. That makes a lot of sense. And do you feel like some of those insecurities were already innate, that maybe you were unsure about some of your life choices anyway, and then to hear other people also voice that kind of validated perhaps existing insecurities? Or do you feel that was very much external coming in?
Yeah, I would like to say it's an external thing, but I think I speak for a lot of creatives or anyone who puts themselves out there. You have that in a way, this kind of uncertainty, self-doubt. You're kind of like vulnerable to it, you know. Those words come in externally, they are amplified. Your life choices are very risky. They're very against the grain. So we're really going to highlight the fact that it's not normal and make you feel more pressured and worried about it as well. That's what I feel like those voices are doing anyway to something that you've chosen to do, which people don't see as normal, if that makes sense.
Definitely, I totally agree. I think we all, to an extent, have insecurities, that some of them may be internal, some of them we've adopted from the wider world and narrow ideas of what it means to be a successful human. Despite the reality of the diversity and so many roots of life that are all around us, there can still be this pressure of conformity. What you said there is really key about making yourself vulnerable, because by putting yourself out in a creative way, you've got all the general pressure of seeming to live life right. And then the addition of your career being dependent on other people's approval to an extent. You need people to buy into your music and who you are and the kind of brand you build around that for your success to happen. And so, of course, those close to you questioning some of these choices is going to have a huge impact.
100%, yeah. It's so true. Because you choose these things and you kind of go into it thinking, well, this is what I want to do. This feels natural to me. This is a normal pursuit for me. I've done music for years. I can't really imagine myself not doing it and kind of not pursuing it.
Mm-hmm.
But then it's kind of other people's opinions. You take them on and be like, oh, actually, no, I should feel a bit worried about this because so many other people are. So like, sometimes I do question this. Like even now, I sometimes question, am I normal? If I'm not thinking like them, am I fucked up or something? I do think that a lot. But I do love, I'm very passionate about music.
Mm-hmm.
Like, music takes me away. It's my escape. It's my reality. It's my love. It's my hate. It's like everything's a huge part of who I am, has been for years. And the fact that I'm so, so passionate about it, I sometimes question if that means I'm normal compared to other people. And that self-doubt is like, is this normal to be so into something? Because not everyone is, you know.
And even in a way, that might be part of the reason why people can be critical, because it's not normalized to really love what you do. Like, you are in the minority in that. And I know it can feel like it's specific paths that people are like that around, but I think it's kind of everything to an extent. Like, an example from my own perspective is, I don't understand how accountants enjoy their job. Counting other people's money, to me, sounds hard and stressful and very not fun. But for some people, that's their passion and that's what they really love.
Yeah.
But they also have the advantage of that being a job with a salary and other more conventional tropes that mean people can easily buy into it. But I think to an extent, we all go through this process of questioning, is this the right path for me?
No, you're right. I'm sure we all go through it. It's just, when you say it like that, it's just part of life, really, isn't it? No matter what path you choose, it is just part of living. It's how you deal with the self-doubt that becomes yours from external experiences. It is a mindset thing when it comes to self-esteem.
And so in terms of where your mindset was at the point of this major panic attack and first going to the GP with these suggestions from A&E of support, Do you feel like your self-esteem at that point was a factor in deciding whether or not to get further support?
Yeah, definitely, because I wanted my, is confidence the right word? I wanted my confidence to be stronger. Like what happened, I never ever wanted that to happen again. It was like pure fear and panic and then just being scared when that panic attack happened. I never wanted that to happen again. So I felt like it shakes my confidence a lot and my self-esteem. So I just wanted to have a stronger base. So that was definitely one of the deciding factors of like, okay, I'm going to go ahead with this therapy. And when I did a bunch of research as well, I was like, do you know what? This might be good for me anyway, even if I wasn't struggling with anxiety and stuff like that. It was kind of like, okay, I'm going to do it to make me feel more stable. And also I'm going to get the benefits of understanding cognitive behavior, you know? So I was kind of like really trying to look into the positives of doing it. And the negatives of doing it was like, okay, I can't tell anyone I'm going to go to therapy. Oh, this means I'm a bit weak. I can't deal with stuff. I'm going to go talk to someone. At first, I guess I never really told many people, but after my first one, I was very proud about it because it was different to what I'd thought. And once I had that first session, I was like, I'm actually going to love this. Telling everyone about it, like, yeah, I get to therapy once a week. I can't wait to go next week. It's like my favorite day of the week to go. And I think I was proud because I took that initial step and I kind of got over my ego. Once I made that step, I was kind of like, oh, it's stupid to think it's embarrassing or something.
I love that. I'm very much the extreme of that now, that I'm the same. I love talking about therapy to people. I love bringing up things that I've talked about in therapy. It's like I will force normalization on this topic. And sometimes you do see them almost flinch at hearing about it. They're like, oh no, you're one of those people. But I love bringing it out into the open and making it part of a normal conversation. But it also sounds like you might have been held back from doing that because you'd had all these experiences where you'd had to justify your career and your lifestyle to people. And then you may have seen needing this support as some kind of threat to that, that, oh, this is a sign that the life I've chosen, I'm not coping with. Would that mean it's confirmation to other people that I am doing the wrong thing with my life?
I guess there's part of that. There's part of that as well. In a way, the type of person I am, I'm quite a driven person. I'm quite courageous in terms of things I've done in my life. A lot of people know me as quite like a hardworking, driven person. Like, oh yeah, he's got his shit together. So like the kind of paranoid feeling to some is that, oh, he hasn't got his shit together. Oh my God, he's a mess. He's going to therapy. Like, oh my God, I thought he had it all figured out. Oh no, he's weak. Like, is that worry? Like, I said that in a joking way because I do see it as a joke now. The fact that thoughts like that would hold me back from getting the help I needed. Like you said, now I speak about it openly now. I'm very proud about it. It's actually, personality of mine is actually stronger, even more so now. And I still have therapy now, like being and understanding it more and understanding myself a lot more.
For sure. And if anything, to me, the strong thing is always to get the support. You know, it's scary and big for a reason, partly because it's important. You know, to me, getting the support is the opposite of weak.
Yeah, we think like that. I still think a lot of people now don't think like that. They think it's a sign of weakness. It's only once you've kind of gone through it and accepted it and lived with it, then you're kind of like, oh, no, actually, this is very beneficial and very strengthening and empowering.
Yeah, really opens your eyes. And did you find then the confidence you were looking to build came partly through going to therapy and committing to that?
Yeah, massively. I'm trying to figure out how to put it into words, like how it did help with self-esteem. It's more about being at peace with yourself, with any flaws you think you have or insecurities. What it helped me with is being at peace with everything, because I was definitely a lot more calmer after being at therapy. More of a natural confidence, not confidence in terms of being a different person. It was just more confidence within yourself, quiet confidence. I think things for me were very situational. So it's like, rather than before, I might have like not been okay with a situation and I'd panic and I'll get everyone involved and be like, oh my God, I don't feel like this isn't the way I want it and everyone needs to know and I'm panicking. And I became destructive in some ways, but from therapy, the confidence was just being at peace with what life was throwing at me. And yeah.
I think that's a really great point. Ultimately, we can all find flaws with ourselves. You can be as confident and have as high self-esteem as possible, if there is such a way to quantify that. But there'll still always be flaws you can find, things that maybe no one else would even consider a flaw. You'll still find something small to criticize about yourself. So actually, in many ways, the big thing is your approach, is how you look at yourself, how you treat yourself, as opposed to being free of flaws, because it's just not even possible.
It is about being at peace with it. Social media doesn't really help that, does it, in a way? So people are kind of putting out this perfected, let's say we're talking about aesthetics and like image, if some people don't like the way they look and then they're seeing like an airbrushed perfect looking person, like I don't think it's helping other people be at peace with what they're kind of insecure about. But something I talk about a lot actually in my music is a slogan I say is fuck perfection. The reason I said that is because it was something I learned about in my CBT, perfectionism, and how perfectionism actually causes anxiety. Yeah, so something I started to say was, like, fuck perfection. And when I started saying that to myself and started looking into how perfectionism is actually really bad, I became a lot more free in my life and my artistry. I wouldn't kind of like second guess myself. I wouldn't overjudge something, trusting that you're enough and what you do is enough. And you in that moment is enough. You know, you in that social situation is enough. You're not going to be perfect, but so what? Who is? So that's something
I love that you mentioned that. That's the slogan of mine, you are enough. It's something that I say at the end of every podcast episode. So thank you for explaining that.
Awesome.
That's so true. I totally agree. And so have you found then, in terms of your confidence, like with your art and with, you know, when it comes up to times of anxiety, like releasing new music, have you found that these changes to your self-esteem have really improved that?
A lot, really. After my therapy, my initial therapy, it was actually after then that I started this chapter of my music career. I was doing music for years before in other bands, and now I'm a solo artist, but the transition from being in the band to solo artist was very tough for me to do that. And it was actually the therapy experiences I had that actually started that journey for me and made that transition a lot easier. And yeah, basically instilled this confidence that I can do this on my own and trust that I'm enough. Because before I was writing loads and loads of songs and be like, it's not good enough, it's not good enough, it's not good enough. It's like, nothing's going to be good enough, like ever. If I'm going to set my standards that high, I'll never release anything. I'll never do what I want to do because I'm overanalyzing it. I'm being a perfectionist in a way. It would never stop. So it was kind of like, trust that you're enough and do your thing, put it out then. That's been my motto ever since. And it's helped so much. I've built up a fan base and, you know, I'm doing stuff. You know, I thought, oh, I'm never going to get there. Like, how am I going to get there again? Like, how am I going to get there? Like, if I've got this block with myself of this, like, everything's got to be right and perfect, it's got to be the right time. It's like, long-winded answer, but to answer your question, yeah, it definitely instilled a lot of confidence.
And in many ways, I feel like that sort of links back to something we were talking about at the start around the path you've chosen in life, being a musician. And for a lot of people, that does scream, you know, risk and instability. And you said yourself what a difficult pursuit it is. But at the same time, I think somewhere in you, there must have been that confidence waiting to blossom, that you knew you had something to offer. You knew there was talent there. For all that you had, you know, the criticisms and the self-doubt. And so in that way, the kind of reality of your talent wins out. And that's something that scares me when I see creative people be stunted by their mental health, how much talent is being crushed.
Yeah.
The example I thought of while you were talking was Dr. Dre. You know, he had an album he just gave up on because he never thought it was going to be good enough. And that's nothing to do with him being untalented. Of course not. But, you know, somewhere along the way, the ego or the self-doubt or the self-esteem, some combination got in the way.
Yeah, it's crazy to think. It can be such a shame when there's so much talent which is just getting left on the table. No, I totally agree. The thing is as well, something I write about now, it's in my music now, my experiences of mental health. And once I got over that, it was more about actually, this is about self-belief, believing that you're enough, believing you're good enough. And that became my theme for my music. Pretty much all my songs are about self-belief. It's my message. I always think about my music as if it's being written for the younger me, and they need that self, they need this permission to believe in themselves, and it's coming from the music. So yeah, all my songs are about what we're talking about, really. I've got a song called Nerves, which is about breaking through social anxiety and not letting it overwhelm you, and a big part of my art now.
That's so great to hear. I love that. And no doubt your audience appreciate that, because people relate to truth and they relate to progress far more than they do these kind of idealized images we see in the media.
Yeah.
Like, in many ways, social media is quite counterproductive in that way. We'll all double tap on like a pretty picture, but will it actually resonate with us? Is there anything beyond that being attractive? I've certainly found through my journey with this podcast, people relate to your ups and downs and the things you've progressed through. What they don't relate to is someone that pretends that they were just born and everything went well for them and they didn't have any issues. I honestly don't know how I would relate to someone like that at all.
This is a crazy thing though, because that is so true. It's so true. But people want to be perceived like that. They haven't had issues. They've got all their shit together. Like, they're winning at life, and they want everyone to see them like that. Like you just said, it's not relatable either. So in a way, you're kind of cutting off people by not being this true human, in a way, which is just crazy. Do you know what I mean?
To struggle is to be human. And yeah. So that's an integral part of who we are and what connects us, despite all the differences we have. So I think there's so much power in owning that. Having high self-esteem, you know, something that I don't really believe people are born with. I think everyone has to work at having high self-esteem. But like you've described, that can be incredibly freeing, because then you can embrace all the sides of you, the good days, the bad days. It really takes the pressure off. You feel better about how people perceive you, even if they perceive you badly. It doesn't hit home as much if you don't believe the things they're saying.
Yeah, so true.
And so we'll start wrapping up then. We're sadly coming near the end of our time. If anyone is listening to this and they're really relating to what you're saying, and they maybe feel they're earlier in their journey than you are, is there something you would want to share?
I would just say to be open to information out there and help. Don't be ashamed to talk openly about things you go through. And especially for guys, if you are worried about coming across weaker or undesirable because you are struggling mentally, that's something that really needs to be checked, is the ego, is your ego, and realise that your ego can actually be very damaging for you and stop you getting the help that you require.
For sure. And I would just add to that, in the long term, that may feel like some kind of threat to your attractiveness, but actually getting help and support to be stronger, more resilient, healthier, that's far more attractive in the long term.
Yeah, 100%.
Okay, so we'll start wrapping up there then. So if people want to learn more about you and your music, where should they go?
All over the internet. My handle on Twitter, Instagram is Danny Wrights UK. Yeah, and my music's on Spotify as well. So just search Danny Wrights. I've just put a new song out called I Hate Everything. And yeah, go check it out. Hit me up online. If you want to chat, hit me up in my DMs. They're always open.
Just fully soliciting.
Yeah.
No, I'd really recommend Danny's music. It does tackle some serious topics, but it does it in a catchy and fun way that will really get stuck in your head. So we'll wrap up there then. Thank you so much for being part of the show today.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening. For a list of our recommended resources, visit mentalpodcast.co.uk. And remember, we are in no way a substitute for qualified counselling or other mental health support. Our show is edited and produced by the brilliant Pete Murta, with licensed music by NetSky. Links in the description. Speak to you next Thursday, and remember, you are enough.